Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into a London listed investment trust focused on Vietnam in Vietnam Holding. We're going to be looking at the wider market, the equity market and the economy out there in Vietnam. And we're going to be paying particular attention to ESG. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Craig Martin, who is the chair of Dynan Capital, the manager of the Vietnam Holding Investment Trust. Craig, very much welcoming you to the podcast this morning.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you again, Jonathan.
So, as I outlined, Craig, we're going to be speaking about the trust, where you are now. We're going to be looking at some of the holdings. We're going to be looking at the wider market. But to start with, I did mention that we're going to be discussing ESG. So that's going to be the first topic that we get stuck into this morning, Craig. Now, I believe that very recently, Vietnam Holdings sponsored the inaugural ESG Investor Conference over in Vietnam. So it would be good to hear how that went. And also, what does it look like on the ground in Vietnam in terms of ESG? It would be good to hear about the types of companies that are involved and what the general perception is and general activities of your everyday company that you may be looking at within the trust and what they're doing for ESG.
Sure. Well, look, firstly, we were really surprised at how well the conference was received locally. It was over 2 days. We had more than 350 participants joining, many of them local companies, service providers in Vietnam, as well as international investors. And I think probably a few key takeaways were that, look, it's still early days and everyone's on a journey. Our portfolio companies and the companies in Vietnam are still on a journey. And our message, we had the privilege of kicking it off with a keynote. And our message was, it's all about doing more, measuring more, and then reporting more. So just focusing everyone's activities and efforts, rather, on activities that, you know, can meaningfully be impacted over the, you know, 3 to 5 year horizon. So we were delighted when some of the companies on the stage actually thanked Vietnam Holding, even though we're a small investor in some of these companies. They recognized what we've done at Dynam, what the team have done to really engage with them and to help them understand, you know, the changing world of responsible investing. And I think many of them are getting it, particularly. And one of the key things that came through was, not surprisingly, about the E in ESG, the environment. You know, Vietnam is very aware of changes in the environment, even this year, because of, you know, high temperatures and perhaps impact from El Nino. There are going to be probably some disruptions to electricity supply because water levels will be lower and Vietnam's got a very large hydropower supply base. So that's impacted. And I think people generally are looking more about, you know, reducing plastic waste. A couple of years ago, the government committed Vietnam to net zero by 2050. And just 2 weeks before the conference, the Vietnamese government released a new energy plan. It's called PDP8. It's the power development plan, and it sets forth what the government's ambitions are to change the energy mix so that by 2050, Vietnam will be net zero and not reliant on coal, whereas at the moment, it's reliant on hydro, and that's impacted by climate and temperature. It's also heavily reliant on coal, and obviously that's bad from a carbon emission perspective. But the government's really been pushing on the renewable front. So I think one of the themes that came through were the tremendous opportunities, but also the challenges of how do you, you know, add 200 gigawatts of new renewable energy over the next couple of decades in Vietnam and what that means. But for me, I think the takeaway was many of the Vietnamese companies, and particularly some of the younger companies that might be the rising stars of tomorrow, their CEOs, many of whom are female, are really grasping the opportunity and trying to you know, make their businesses have a lower carbon impact and yet not sacrifice growth and profitability. It's a very difficult balance. You know, Vietnam's such a growth economy. It's a modern industrializing country. It's the export hub for much of the world. So it does need energy. And unfortunately, at the short term, that's going to come from probably traditional sources. coal and gas, but the government is really trying to shift it much more to a lower carbon, cleaner, renewable energy basis. And that was one of the key things that came through the conference over those 2 days.
So, Craig, I'd argue that we saw probably 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years now, that we saw a watershed moment in ESG. We saw a big move towards ESG among asset managers and investment managers. We saw companies putting out statements for the first time on a wide basis. Of course, that the government's been involved, and we see all of the stakeholders moving in unison. Do you feel that that watershed moment has been met in Vietnam yet? And maybe was this event a representation of that?
Look, it's a great question. I think certainly the event for Vietnam was a marker in the ground. You know, the inaugural conference and Vietnam Holding and Dynam, we're very proud to be part of bringing that to fruition in the country. But you raise a very good point. I mean, globally, ESG investing has really grown rapidly in recent years. And in the last 7 years, I think globally, there's something like $7.5 trillion in ESG assets. That's doubled in 7 years. And you know that level could hit $33 trillion within another 2 or 3 years. And that would mean that kind of ESG technically makes up more than a fifth of total institutional kind of assets under management within a few years. And so that's both a transition point, but there is obviously a lot of skepticism globally, and people are pushing back a little bit. They're saying there's greenwashing. So I think for Vietnam, it's the early stage of that journey, and it's companies having to report more. So they are looking to measure their carbon footprint, which we've been doing for a number of years. But they are increasingly, you know, if you look at the S in ESG, it's about your staff, your suppliers, and your stakeholders. Each of those are much more exposed to what's happening in ESG in Vietnam. So yes, the environment that I've mentioned and the move to renewable energy, the climate risk, you know, the rivers. Vietnam's still, you know, large, you know, it's got a big agricultural base, so that is susceptible to changes in climate, changes in sea level around that. And then also, I think on the G in ESG, the governance, over the last few years, Vietnam Holding and Dynam Capital as its manager has really been pushing on the governance front. My business partner Tin co-founded the Vietnam Institute of Directors. So we've been trying to encourage people around having better boards, better training, and reporting on that. And Vietnam actually in the last year has seen the kind of negative side of bad governance, where there have been some issues in a few companies in the stock market. There's been arrests of people abusing their market positions in the bond market and in the real estate market. So I think these things are all kind of front of center. So I think the timing is right. The timing is right on the climate adjustments to get to net zero by 2050. People are much more aware as a society through social media, and everyone in Vietnam is social media connected. There's more than 72 million kind of Facebook accounts in Vietnam about the environment, about the need to reduce plastic waste. And then add on to that the kind of changes needed in governance to see the country develop, but on a you know fairly more equitable basis for people in Vietnam. So, yeah, the timing is right. It's still early, though. We're lucky our top 10 companies in our portfolio, many of them are leaders now in Vietnam in ESG. And we're delighted to have had a role to play with that. But there are 1,600 public companies in Vietnam, and the majority of them aren't as active as a responsible investor or following ESG. So there's a lot of work still to go. So it's early days, it's a journey, and we're very pleased and proud to be helping our portfolio companies on that journey.
Thank you, Craig. That's fascinating and certainly a story that we will continue to monitor. So we're going to move on now to Vietnamese equities, Craig. So last year, there's no two ways about it. It was a bad year for Asian equities, and that does include the Vietnamese indices as well. But this year, much better. Looking here at the Vietnamese indices overnight, looking like they're closing near the highest points so far in 2023. So what's been the main driver in this rally so far this year, Craig?
Well, look, put simply, I think it's been a return in domestic confidence. So last year, part of the decline was everyone nervous what was happening in the world globally, you know, with the war in Ukraine and thoughts of recession in many developed countries and cost of living and energy price volatility. So there was that kind of global fear. And then domestically in Vietnam, as I alluded to, there were issues in the real estate market and in the bond market. And that spooked local investors. And when deposit rates were edging up to 10% in Vietnam, they're putting money on deposit. They're pulling out of the stock market. And the domestic investors probably account for maybe 90% of the daily activity in the stock market. So they're a significant driving force in the Vietnam equity story. And so when you add that significant volume of domestic investors plus fear, local and global concerns, it was a pretty torrid time for equity market investors like ourselves. Then into this year, certainly in the last few months, we've seen domestic confidence start to rebound a little bit. We've seen the macro picture in Vietnam be robust, despite kind of global concerns that persist on recession. Record levels of trade surplus, even though kind of exports have been down a bit in Vietnam. Inflation seems to be well under control in Vietnam. The currency is pretty stable. The government's been proactive and interest rates have been lowered. So it gives an incentive for people maybe to move money out. You only get 6 or 7% on deposit now. So maybe you put some of that back into the stock market. And we've seen the daily liquidities treble in the last couple of quarters. So I think it's a domestic confidence returning. And so people are looking forward to the year. Also, stocks are relatively cheap in Vietnam, and they've been at historic levels. The end of last year, in the sell-off, they went to pretty much historically low valuations, particularly on price earnings and for the banks on a price-to-book basis. They've rallied a little bit. They're up 30, 40%, but they're still cheap. And we're still in a market that's got growth. So our portfolio, for example, is on a price earnings of less than 10 times, so single-digit PE, and yet an earnings per share growth of more than 20% for our portfolio. The market's probably 10 to 12%, but we've got a couple of companies that are going to print very high levels of growth this year. So I think some of that good news comes through to the market. It takes a while for the real estate market to recover from last year's woes. It takes a while for the bond market to recover, but the government's saying all the right things and starting to do the right things. And then we're seeing a lot more domestic infrastructure expenditure, which provides opportunities for business to business companies and construction companies maybe. And so I think the mood's started to change. So this year, year to date, the market's probably up 13%. We're outperforming the market as the fund, and sticking to our core business of a concentrated portfolio of 20 to 30 companies. And we're seeing that, the markets move more favorably than they did last year. And I think foreign investors are starting to look back at the market again as well. So when you have resurgent domestic interest and then the foreigners start to come in, it probably provides a little bit of a buoyancy to the market. So a lot better at this kind of halfway point in this calendar year than we were at the end of last year.
I'm going to be discussing some of those companies that you mentioned there, Craig, a little bit later on in the podcast. But before we do that, I just want to touch on the classification of Vietnam. And I believe around June, MSCI, the indexing company that sets out indices, including the emerging markets, frontier, developed markets, are set to do their adjustments in June. Looks like South Korea is front and center for a promotion to the developed market out of emerging market. Of course, that's one of the biggest players in emerging markets. But it is something that we've discussed ourselves between us, Craig, on a podcast and presentations previously, that Vietnam is high on the list of prospects to become an emerging market and move up and be promoted from a frontier market. And it is, from being in a number of meetings so far this year with emerging markets managers, equity managers, they've all got their eyes on Vietnam. And it's something that all of them that I found quite striking mentions Vietnam. They like the companies, they like the dynamics, they like the demographics of Vietnam, as you previously outlined. But of course, as an emerging market manager, they're held back from making those investments at this point in time because it doesn't fall underneath their mandate. No. So what's the update, Craig, on Vietnam becoming an emerging market and taking that important step to becoming an emerging market from a frontier market?
Well, I think the short answer is no news. Maybe no news is good news. But look, you're right. So normally, annually, I think in June of each year, MSCI kind of release their thinking on the league adjustments, who's going up to the Premier League, who's getting relegated and what have you. And you mentioned South Korea. I think it's interesting. I think South Korea is still, it's an emerging market. It feels it should be a developed market. And I don't think there's been any change to that status. So it's probably got to wait another year or so. Vietnam, slightly at the earlier end of the story, it's, as you rightly say, Jonathan, it's got all the characteristics of an emerging market. It's macro, it's growth, the depth of the liquidity in the stock market, number of companies, all of those things. Yet it's still a frontier market because it doesn't meet all the kind of 18 criteria that MSCI quiz large institutional investors on. And the most important of those is, do foreign investors have a totally level playing field? And there are still some restrictions, foreign ownership limits in some Vietnamese companies. And that unfortunately still makes up more than, I think, maybe 10% of the Vietnam index has these restrictions. So up until now, Vietnam's still been in the frontier index. It's the largest single country in the frontier index. So obviously, frontier market investors have a good allocation, 30% probably to Vietnam. But it's not yet an emerging market. There's been no talk of it this year. So probably the earliest is next year. So probably June 2024 is the earliest it could be put on the watch list. And that is, we're reviewing and we think Vietnam will come into the emerging market. And then that might take another 12 months thereafter. So it's a long journey. But you're right. It means that Vietnam is not part of the emerging market index. So those people that like the Vietnam story, maybe they've been there, or they see the attractiveness, the inflection point of urbanization, the inflection point of economic growth, and see how Vietnam's been developing over the last 30 years and say, right, I'm interested. It's an off-market bet if they want to be substantially invested in Vietnam because it's not part of the emerging market index. So it's not holding back, doesn't impact domestic investors, but there would certainly be a tremendous, I think, lift in equity values and perhaps re-ratings in Vietnam at some point in time in the future when the agencies say, you've done everything needed, now you get to go into the emerging market. Your companies get to be classified within the emerging market index. And there are some, very large companies now in Vietnam with the level of growth. Some of our portfolio companies were $100 million a decade ago in market value. They're now, a billion plus, and some Vietnamese companies are several billion dollars of market cap. So probably over time, I think the emerging market index is where Vietnam should be. But it's not there yet. And so investors, I think, have to be patient, but, get in early and I think reap the rewards in the future.
So, Craig, just want to go back to the point that you made there. And I think it should be a good gauge of the process that Vietnam has to go through. You mentioned there's about 10% of the equities in the index which still have that restrictions on them. Is this something that's governed by the company themselves, or is this something from the regulator that puts restrictions on certain companies? It'd be good to get a bit of insight into what that process looks like.
No, it's a very good question, Jonathan. So a few years ago, it was very unclear. And then the government a few years ago started to kind of provide a little bit more boundary markers around what sectors are restricted to foreigners, what are limited to maybe 49% ownership or 30% ownership, and gave a lot more clarity and actually came out with some rules that said, look, unless we say you're in a restricted sector, you're not. And then the companies themselves, actually, for some of them, it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but for some companies, it's to their advantage to be deemed a local company. So some retailers, for example, as a local company, you can open as many stores as you like. And there's one company in our portfolio, Mobile World, which has been a category killer in several key sectors of retail. And by being a local company, even though it's listed, it's 49% owned by foreigners, but it's still a local company, it can open a store a day and has been doing that happily for a decade. Whereas if it was a foreign company, there are more restrictions. not Vietnam's not the only country in the world where this happens. In India and other markets, you know, if you're a big Tesco's and you want to open stores, you'll probably be allowed to open one store, and then the government says, right, you can open a second, because they're trying to, you know, protect the local domestic retailers. So in that instance, it's Mobile World chooses effectively that it's a local company, and therefore it's capped at 49% foreign ownership. If it chooses in the future to say, well, actually, you know, we don't need to open so many stores now, it could probably adjust its kind of classification. So some sectors obviously have a little bit more sensitivity, perhaps in telecommunications, those that perhaps are in financial services, banks, it's a 30% limit. So we will anticipate these limits to be adjusted in the future. Over the decades previously, they have been increased and clarified. And that's one of the issues, but it's not the only issue. And some of the other points, the Vietnamese stock market is making good headway. It's improving its infrastructure. It's looking to reduce the kind of settlement period on trades from down to, you know, a couple of days, day and a half, and then kind of daily settled, and to put in a new infrastructure later this year that might help with kind of central depository issues. So it means investors don't have to kind of pre-fund their accounts to trade. And all of these things incrementally make Vietnam more attractive in the eyes of the foreign investors. And they are the people who influence MSCI and other such agencies in their ratings. So it's something to keep an eye on. It doesn't affect day-to-day business. As a foreigner, you can sometimes, these premiums that you have to pay on these foreign restricted companies, sometimes those premiums are zero, sometimes they're 3%, sometimes they're 7%. Worst case, let's say there's a company you really want to be invested in. As a foreigner, you pay a small premium. If you're holding that company over, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, the fact that you paid a small premium at the entry point, it doesn't really matter a great deal. So it just depends on your kind of time frame and your patience and your appetite.
Of course, of course. So we're actually going to drill down now, Craig, into the portfolio, and we're going to be looking at some of the changes you've made to your holdings. So let's start off with, you know, what are the big companies or big moves, most exciting prospects that you've added to the portfolio in recent times?
Well, look, we're an active investor. We have a high active weight in our portfolio. We're not the index, we're index aware, but we're just trying to find, you know, good bottom-up companies in the key sectors we see. But we're not idle. We're a nimble investor. We're helped in that by our size. We're about $150 million of value. We can be nimble from the small, the medium, and the large companies. And so we have a conviction-led approach. So some sectors and some companies, conviction increases, we add more to it. So as you look at our portfolio, there's certainly many very familiar names that have been there for quite some time. FPT, our number one company, keeps compounding at 20 to 30% per annum as a digital champion in Vietnam, in outsourcing, in telecommunications, even in broadband and pay TV. So, you know, we find that still a very compelling story as Vietnam industrializes and continues to digitalize. So that's been our number one position for quite some time. We've got about 30% of the portfolio in banks, which is as much as we're allowed to have by the way we set our investment policy up. And within that, though, there are many banks to choose from. So we've been kind of tilting a little bit to some of the banks we really favor. And the banks have been quite cheap. So when we've been adding to those, it's been adding at relatively low entry points. And we see good growth in those banks. Many of them have been prudent in the past. They haven't been paying lots of dividends for many years. So they've got quite prudent balance sheets and they've taken lots of provisions in the previous year. So although there's been a lot of kind of economic pain, you know, as the world's been slowing down, the banks, are able to withstand a lot of that, certainly the banks that we're in. And then, interestingly, we've been adding a little bit to some brokerages in Vietnam. Again, we take the view that there is a lot of domestic interest in the market, and that interest is starting to pick up again. So we think some of those brokerages will benefit from that. And then we're also keen to, you know, find businesses that perhaps are under the radar of other investors and businesses we think have got an interesting and compelling narrative. And just one of those to mention is the share code is PVS. It's Petrovietnam Technical Services. And it's a business we entered into several months ago with a kind of initial level of conviction because we could see it was a business in transition. It's a large, it's an operator of a large fleet of anchor handling tugs, these specialized vessels that are used to erect oil rigs and gas rigs and all that kind of infrastructure. It's turning its skills and its assets to supporting the growing renewable energy market. I mentioned earlier PDP8, this new energy plan. Well, it calls for 5 gigawatts of offshore wind energy to serve Vietnam, but also to export electricity eventually in the future to other parts of Asia, including Singapore, which is a very wealthy country. And PVS, our portfolio company, is very actively positioned in that. It signed a contract with a big Singapore company to help lay what could be the world's largest undersea power cable, about 800 kilometers, connecting Vietnam and its wind energy to Singapore that doesn't have any wind energy, as well as being a key part of that shift in Vietnam's energy mix to offshore, onshore, and nearshore wind, as well as serving other countries. So this little Vietnamese company has got big contracts in Taiwan. It's got contracts in Europe where it can take its fleet and its resources and its capabilities in offshore services, you know, in tricky parts of the sea and laying infrastructure. A wind farm has a lot of similarities to, you know, oil and gas infrastructure. So it's a company in transition. We think that's laudable. And so we think that's both a good growth opportunity, a lower carbon opportunity, and a very interesting way to play the move to more renewable energy in a place like Vietnam. So that's just what, you know, an interesting company to keep an eye on in the future. But our portfolio, solid names in the banks, in technology, in industrialization, and then, you know, a couple of positions we've been in the retail story, underpinning perhaps, you know, Vietnam's continual per capita GDP growth. What's lower in our portfolio today than, say, last year is real estate. That market's gone through a lot of challenges, partly because of funding restrictions on the bond market. So we've been underweight the real estate market for several months now. And so, you know, its time will come again. Vietnam's urbanization is only 38%. That's where Europe was at the end of the Second World War, and where China was 20 years ago before doubling. So Vietnam will need to build more houses in the future. So it's probably something in the future that we'll add back to into the portfolio. But at the moment, we're finding better opportunities in other segments and increasing our conviction in other specific names in the portfolio that, you know, we think will benefit in the mid long term.
So, Craig, I just want to go back to a point that you made there about one of the companies obviously listed in Vietnam, but operating elsewhere within the region, and of course, then providing exposure to the growth stories elsewhere. I mean, in terms of the visibility that you have on the companies, you know, are there a lot of companies within the portfolio that are, yes, maybe core operations in Vietnam, but then, you know, maybe in the case of banks, for example, do they have operations in other countries in the vicinity that then provides investors in Vietnam holding some form of exposure to the growth across the Southeast Asian economy?
Well, actually, largely not. The domestic market in Vietnam, the stock market, is mainly focused on Vietnam. Yes, some of the banks have operations in Cambodia and Laos and some of the companies in the region, but there are very few global champions in Vietnam. But there are a couple of exceptions to that. So FPT, our number one holding, it provides digital services to Japanese banks and Fortune 500 companies. It's got operations in the US, in Europe, and in Japan. So that's plugged into the global market of providing high-tech technology solutions to global companies. So that's one exception. And then PVS, so Petrovietnam Technical Services, it is active, as I mentioned, in wind projects in Taiwan, in Poland, in other parts of the world. But these are probably the exceptions rather than the rule. Most of the Vietnamese companies Most of the companies listed on the stock market in Vietnam are focused really on the, you know, the 100 million population, the domestic story, or are a part of the kind of infrastructure of the manufacturing that is the made in Vietnam for global export. But there are very few Vietnamese companies at this stage that are global in the sense that they have direct activities and presence in many, many countries. There's half a dozen. And that's, you know, a mark of, you know, Vietnam's still got a long way to go. There's a massive runway of opportunity. There's a few technology companies. Some of them are private that are looking to expand. Vietnam has an electric vehicle company, which is looking to set up a big factory in the US and is looking to actually get a listing, possibly even through a SPAC. Those things are still going on. So there are companies that have global ambitions, but for many, the domestic market's big enough and interestingly enough in Vietnam. So, and there are some challenges. It's, you know, it's not so easy. If a company wants to open an office in Vietnam and invest outside of Vietnam, it still needs a lot of kind of government permission to do so. So Vietnam is still an emerging or a frontier market, depending on how you look at it in that regard. But there are companies that are certainly the backbone of global operations. Many global businesses have their back office, their service centers in Vietnam. So it's very much plugged in globally, even if many of the companies themselves aren't directly active outside of Vietnam.
Thank you very much, Craig. A very comprehensive answer to my question there. So we're going to finish off now with a question, and it's taking a bit of a step back here, Craig, and we're looking at the wider environment for investment trusts at the moment on the London Stock Exchange. And you know, many managers that I speak to this year, they're looking at wider discounts. They may have even been seeing increasing NAVs, you know, over the last year or so. So nothing to do with the underlying portfolio as such, but they're seeing the share price ebb away slightly in some circumstances or not keep up with the NAV. And that discount is that is increasing. You know, it's, you know, not Vietnam Holdings, it's across the board. So, you know, from where you're sitting, Craig, you know, what are the factors at play here? What's driving this shift in discounts? And maybe is this an opportunity for investors? And is there anything that you as the board and manager of the trust can do about it?
Yeah, it's perplexing, isn't it? So we're doing everything right. Portfolio's up 30%. Portfolio's cheap. Portfolio's got good growth. And yet the funds are on a discount of, you know, 15% to that net asset value. And it's not that there's kind of tricky, hard to value private equity stocks in our portfolio. They're all listed, they're all liquid, they're daily marked to value NAV, and yet the discounts are wide. And as you say, it's not just Vietnam Holding, it's across many of these London listed closed end funds. So I think the only thing that the board can do, which they're very active in doing, is keeping a close watch on that. And they've got a mandate to do share buybacks. So I know the board are very active in doing share buybacks. And I guess it is an opportunity that you mentioned. So you can get the growth in Vietnam in a high portfolio, high quality portfolio of listed stocks with good growth. And yet you could buy it at a 15% discount to NAV, I think, today. So I think it is an opportunity. I think it's just a, you know, dislocation in the supply demand of investment trusts broadly. Maybe it's a point that perhaps the London stock market itself as a whole has been a bit in